Well, it's the big day. It's draft day 2024. How's it going to go? Are there going to be any major things? I don't think that we'll talk much about it. But anyway, here we go. It's a legal shift.
The growing calls across the nation to defund the
giving them business down there. That's a 15-yard penalty.
There's no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Illegal shift on the kicking team. That penalty is refused. First down.
Guts up, giddy up, Wolfpack. This is Failure to Stop. This is Earth's number one podcast. This is Illegal Shift. It's the Thursday installment where first responders talk about sports. But you know what? We're not great at talking about sports. This is probably the only sports podcast you listen to this week where it's like, oh, it's the draft today. And you're like, oh, okay. We'll kind of break down why that is. But I'm John. I'm a 911 dispatcher, which means I'm the guy that you're trying to avoid and get away from and not listen to the entire day that you're at work. Joining me as always is Chief Keefe. He's a firefighter. I believe you still hold the rank of lieutenant somewhere that is not to be confused with the city of Cincinnati. The Queen City. Jason Kiefer, how the hell are you, sir?
Good, buddy. How are you?
You know, I actually I feel okay. It's getting to the point recently where I've been training somebody, which has been a lot of work. But this week, they turned a corner to where now, like, every time I have to do something, I could just put it on them and say that this is training. So it's sort of a mini vacation. I have to jump in there and help sometimes, but kind of coming along. How does it go for you with training firefighters? Once they get to you, are they fully trained, or you still have to do a lot of that, or how does that work?
No, they're certified, you know, through the state, but they're not. We train them to how, like, our department operates. So, like, they've got a whole recruit packet that we go through and check all the boxes and explain to them how we do it at our department and then with our surrounding agencies. But I mean, they're certified, and I'm a part-time instructor. And we don't get a lot of time with them. You know, it's all hours based. So
sure,
we really can't show them in school as much as everything that they need to know. So it's probably about another 3-month process to get them through this packet and, you know, get them up to speed on kind of turning them loose, you know, with what you're doing.
So do you hire them, send them off to a fire academy, and then they come back to you at that point? Or do they spend any time in-house before the academy? Or what's the timeline on that?
Usually most of them come in with the certification already. They're EMT basic and at least a fire one. Some of them have a 36 hour, which is like our volunteer, but they're going to pursue, you know, getting the fire one certificate. So they may do some time in house and then they'll go to class at night or whatever, but they at least have some little inkling of training before they get to us.
Do they assume the cost of that training as an individual private person before they're on with your agency, and your agency doesn't pay for any of that? Or how does the paying for the education work?
The way it worked here, like in my region, you know, way back when, was the department would pay for you to go, and then you essentially signed a contract that you're going to be there X amount of years to kind of pay off that quote unquote loan. And if you leave, you owe money prorated for how much time you were there. But now here lately, I mean, it's usually on their backs. It's their responsibility. But it ebbs and flows, like, on our staffing levels. And I'm sure it's that way across the country. But, you know, I remember testing for the city of Cincinnati, which everybody tried to go there. And there used to be 4,000 people for maybe 3 recruit classes, which would be like 120 individuals. And I think now they're lucky to get 1,000. So it's, I mean, nobody wants to do law enforcement. Nobody wants to do, you know, the fire EMS. Nobody really wants to do those jobs anymore. So we're having a really hard time, you know, getting people, and recruitment and retention is the biggest thing.
It's a little bit different out here. We'll have a dispatcher combine day, and we'll see who can, like, you know, run as many radio channels at once and various other skills, you know, punt, pass, kick, that sort of thing. And then there's a draft, you know, and then agencies will trade draft for other capital. And I myself am very likely to be traded to a much smaller, more northerly agency before this fall. So I'm not looking forward to that. In dispatch, it's a whole different deal. So I just wondered how it worked at firefighters. We'll talk a little bit about the draft today. Sorry that joke about dispatchers didn't land, by the way. You look angry with rage about that I even bothered to make that joke.
No, I was glad that you were able to tie it in and do that double entendre type thing.
Yeah.
If
I was a good dispatcher, I would at least be able to complete a triple entendre. So I'm sorry.
That's why I'm rather middling here.
I'm so late in my career, I'm very, very likely to be sent out to pasture somewhere else, and then kind of Kirk Cousined is what's going to happen to me. The show is brought to you by Ghostbed. Go to the website, ghostbed.com, and you can save 40% or maybe even 50%. I don't know. I hear different things from Tansy. It sleeps so good, it's scary. 0% down, 0% financing. You can go out there with Drake May credit, and you can get a fantastic deal on a mattress. You don't even have to prove anything. You could just be a big deal to Ghostbed. They support first responders, firefighters, dispatchers, police officers, tow truck drivers, whatever else. You can use that offer code Wolfpack as our listeners at Failure to Stop, and you can get a fantastic deal on a mattress and other things that are going to help you get the best sleep that you deserve so that you can go out there well-prepared, well-rested for tomorrow. Factor Meal is kind of the same thing, copy-paste, only, it's food and not sleep, and they bring it to your house. It's completely different. Go to Factor Meals. Use Wolfpack 50, which isn't even the same offer code, and that will save you 50% off to start on your first week. They have over 300 options of delicious meals that can be brought to your house. Chicken, red meat for Keith, whatever it is that you like, you can do your meal prep, your meal planning, have it all brought to your house so you don't have to leave your shift and go out into the throng of loveless humanity that does not appreciate you for anything that you do. And of course, Wellness Company, own your health, own your freeness, own your freeness with Wellness Company. You could possibly take a pill that would help you be able to be better at ad reads at Wellness Company. Own your health, own your wellness, own your freedom at Wellness Company. You can go over there and find solutions that are designed by top doctors. Whether you just want daily supplements like, melatonin to help you sleep or stuff for your digestion, your metabolism, or if you want prescription meds, first aid kits, contagion kits, with a Wellness Company and a membership, you can completely break free from Big Pharma. That's why we love Wellness Company. And use the offer code Wolfpack over there. You could save 10% off. You want to do that before the next emergency starts. Thanks to the Wellness Company. We appreciate you guys so much. Instead of me making more jokes about draft day, why don't we just talk about draft day, Keith?
Let's do it.
Since I'm running out of gas here and I need a break, why don't I sit out a play and you go ahead and you talk about what you think of the draft in general, not this year's draft, but just why is it that you refuse to get excited for the draft?
I think I would be a little bit more excited about it. Like if I was to make a trip out of it and go for that, for those 3 or 4 days, leading up. I mean, you see all the hype videos on ESPN and, all the broadcasters that are out there or podcasters even, looks like a big party. It looks like the Super Bowl before, the couple days before. I think that would be fun. But there's just so much fucking hype, moving into it. And you and I were talking before the show that a lot of these dudes you never even hear of after they get drafted. Or, they have a catastrophic injury and then their career never really flourishes. I mean, it's hard to get excited because these are still, they're great athletes, but they're still young kids that have no idea what professional football is like. And once they get in there, they realize how different it is than, versus college. I mean, when you do get, some of these guys that, the number one draft pick that actually does do something. But when you look at, you go back to Tom Brady, he was 199th drafted and one of the greatest quarterbacks to play the game. You do have those. Those are neat to see, but it takes, a while before you actually see the dividends of that.
I completely agree. I would say number one, I view it as a cynical ploy on the part of an NFL to make the NFL relevant throughout the year. It used to be the case that the NFL draft was really not a big deal. Case in point, the Atlanta Falcons once drafted John Wayne. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I was not aware.
But it was a late round, and they're just they realized that, at this point, all the talent, first of all, it's sort of all even, it doesn't matter who we take, or we have no way of having any idea, who is a better player. And this was kind of before the era of deep analytics that we have now,
right?
And professional scouts that we have now.
But at one point, the owner of the Atlanta Falcons says, you want this team to be the toughest. You want me to draft this most toughest son of a bitch player ever. I'm the Atlanta Falcons select John Wade. And everyone cheers. So it's just from Fort Smith State or whatever. Like they literally named whatever college it came from. Sort of funny.
Well, I think, I mean, we both love the NFL. Let's get to the season. Like I'm excited to get to the actual season where they're actually playing. But a lot of these guys, you're not going to see some of these guys. I mean, your top tens, you'll see. But once you get past, you know, the second round, it just fucking drags on.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely drags on. And why these teams take so long to, they know who they're drafting. Like they've got teams of people that are making a lot of money, but yet here we are sitting there watching a timer. Ooh, I wonder who they're going to pick. I wonder who they just draw it out and it's all money. It's all money related and you know, advertising related.
Yeah. They try to turn it into almost a pageant, you know, which, you know, it's really not that. And then suppose, you know, your team, you know, you've been in a position where I've been the last few years where it's just like, oh, we're drafting Tristan Hill, Mazi Smith, like, you know, what Mazi Smith, whatever his name is. I'm like, that's good. You know, I guess he played pretty well for the Wolverines. And then, you know, Tristan Hill. And then there was Taco Carlton, where it's like, whose renown came from the fact that his name was literally Taco and the fact that he was a huge bust. So it's like we have all this overhype. And then you have all these guys that just kind of bust or fade away, or they go to positions where, unless you're like the biggest football fan on earth, you know, are you going to appreciate a defensive lineman being drafted? And then finally, just who the hell knows? Like you get Mitch Trubisky being drafted, you know, before Patrick Mahomes. And it just goes to show you that, you know, as much as we talk about, you know, are these teams going to trade up in the draft? Are they going to trade up, trade down and all this? It's just like, like you said, anyone who's going in the first round, in terms of predictable talent, they're often about the same.
Right.
You know, nobody made a big deal out of Patrick Mahomes being drafted at all. He turned into a phenom once he was already in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. You know, the point where they're putting out Alex Smith, you know, and being okay with what they're seeing with Patrick Mahomes in practice and all this. So
I think it would be cool if, like, being on the inside of it. Like the movie, like I absolutely love the movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner, where he's the, you know, the GM of the Cleveland Browns. I don't know if you've seen that movie or not, but it shows all the, you know, all the inside shit that they're dealing with and the infighting, because I know it happens, you know, the infighting between the coach and, you know, the GM, the owner, you know, all that shit. I think that would be cool just because you are in a war room, you know, you've got names flying by your face, you know, trying to figure out, okay, if we grab this guy, then next round we have to grab this guy, you know, just putting the pieces of the puzzle together. I think that would be cool. But as far as the actual draft, you know, when we're done here, I'm probably not even going to watch it.
I'll watch it probably. But I'm not going to get excited about it. The thing is that there's only one draft I've ever been excited for. And that was the 2020 draft, because it's like right at the end of March and the start of April, like it felt like the world ended, you know? And then like you wanted something normal to happen. And then, they still had the draft, of course, because how could they not have it? And it was weird because it was like the first Zoom draft or whatever.
Right. Goodell in his basement.
Yeah. But it was still, it was exciting and it felt good because it gave you hope. It was like, well, you know, not everything's ending. We're still going to have an NFL season. Stuff's going to go on. And there was no other sports of any kind. And I know what you're thinking, Keith. John, you don't watch any other sports. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But just knowing that it wasn't going on. I said to a buddy of mine at work, I said, you know, with all this COVID stuff, you know, it's just amazing. And he goes, yeah, I'm like, it's great that baseball is not being affected though. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, well, I mean, it's great that COVID hasn't affected baseball. And he goes, well, they're not even playing baseball. And I said, yeah, but you can't tell, you know, I've never been able to tell whether they're playing or not. So it's great.
I love your fucking sense of humor.
Sorry. Anyway,
even though you're being serious.
I was, but I mean, like, I do want baseball to be played, and I am this is like the third year in a row where I've had serious intentions of playing baseball, and I don't have cable, so like I can't get a baseball game. It's frustrating, you know. It's funny to see just from a media standpoint how easy it is to access football and how hard it is to really get anything else.
Yeah,
it's frustrating.
That's very true. I mean, like here in Cincinnati, our Reds are on Bally Sports, but then they'll play a game that's on fucking Apple. And if you don't have, and University of Cincinnati basketball, same thing, ESPN Plus, you have to stream it. the way the media has taken control, and it rolls back into this draft, the way the media takes control with all this advertising money, and they handcuff the fans to have to put more money out to be able to enjoy the shit that they watch. And I think that's ridiculous. But, you know, Dan and I were talking on One More and I'm Out of Here about how, and I make fun of him. You know, I was like, yeah, you grew up in the 40s. And he was like, shut up, I'm not that old. But you know, he remembered when you maybe had three games all weekend, football games to choose. Yeah. And now, I mean,
you see virtually all of them. I mean, they get as much as they possibly can. I mean, they've, you know, now that there's a Thursday game and, you know, because of COVID now and because of just the way it's worked with holidays. I mean, now there's a Christmas game. There's a Black Friday game. Right. I mean, you're getting as much as you could ever want. I live out of market for my team, you know, technically. I mean, In a spiritual sense, I don't, because I cheer for America's team and I live in America, so I'm like always in our market. But I get to see a lot of Dallas Cowboys games for someone who doesn't live in Dallas. And I don't know how it is, how it would be for you if you didn't live in Cincinnati, but I think it would be hard for you to be a Bengals fan down there in like Miami. You know,
right?
It would be easy for you.
And that's something I don't think about too. Is, you know, with where you live, you know how pigeonholed you are, and especially not having cable.
It depends. You know, whenever the schedule comes out, what I usually do is I decide what days I'm going to take off to watch games, because I will literally do that. I like having a Sunday off because it extends my weekend to a 3-day weekend. Mm-hmm. And then I watch a football game, and you know, sometimes I take the TV outside and actually will watch, you know, out on the deck or the porch, because it's just a gorgeous autumn evening.
Heck yeah.
Really enjoy doing that, pizza and a beer. And so I'll figure out what the schedule is. And if Dallas is playing at noon, and if the Vikings are playing at noon, I'm not going to be able to see Dallas. I mean, we just know that. And then if the Vikings aren't playing, if Green Bay is playing, I don't get to see Dallas. And depending on whether or not where Dallas is playing, if they're playing at noon, if the Chiefs are playing at that time, I'm not going to see Dallas either. And then sometimes it comes down to the Broncos and the Lions. So I have to actually sit there and do, I don't know if you've ever seen that meme where Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is doing all the little things on the pegboard, but I have to kind of do this thing to figure out whether or not it's going to be on my local market. But like I said, you know, they normally have six primetime games. And then there's certain games that I'm going to be able to see no matter what, like the Thanksgiving Day game. So I always get to, you know, see certain games. So I get to see a bunch of games per year. And then I do this stupid thing where, like, I start taking off days in December, because I start feeling this stupid feeling of belief, like I really need to be invested in the team.
We might make it.
And then I save some time off, I make sure I don't, like, you know, go see my grandma for her birthday. I make sure I save a day off for January. and then I make sure, like, I've got to have some time off for February when the Cowboys are playing in the Super Bowl. And I've told my boss, like, just if the Cowboys are going to the Super Bowl, like, I'm not filling out paperwork to not be here. I'm not telling him on vacation. Just put it in. You know I'm not going to be here. It's never come up. So, you know, just doesn't matter. And right now I'm at the point in the cycle where I'm like, you know, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but, like, I've got my Dallas Cowboys hat on, I guess, but, like, I'm not wearing the t-shirts. I'm not excited for fall. I am not taking off time for their games this year, but I will, you know, once I drink Jerry Jones's Kool-Aid and I have some sort of weird idea about something good happening, you know. But let's go back to this day, April 24th or 25th, draft day. And, just note that I was not excited about this year, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, when you look at the hype, like all the hype behind it, you know, these players that are coming in, and you know, one of the big stories was, you know, the Caleb Williams wanted to, no matter what team drafts him, he wants a stake in the team. And they're like, yeah, we can't do that. So then his dad was like, well, then I want a stake in the team. It's not him, it's me. They put all this, they build these dudes up and make their heads bigger than what they already are. And to think that you can come in and just start dictating, and you're not even drafted yet. You'll get drafted, but why don't you fucking cool your jets, man?
Well, Tom Brady had something interesting to say about that, because he does about everything. But Tom Brady said something interesting, and it was interesting coming from Tom Brady because of who Tom Brady is. Tom Brady is the Taylor Swift of football. Tom Brady said that, you know, these kids coming into the, that they're making it all about themselves and their brand and their image and themselves as a football player, like what you said, whether it's Caleb Williams or whatever. And they're not coming in to be a part of a team. You know, they care about themselves above a team and their own personal success above a team. And, you know, how do you get drafted and assimilate into a functioning unit when you still have the mentality that it's you above everyone else? You know, I think that's one thing that people like about Tom Brady, the people who are very pro Tom Brady, is that he was always willing to take less money to assure that he had talent around him, so they could stay below the salary cap, and that he had a selfless mentality. I don't know if he did or didn't. You know, I was forced to watch a lot of Patriots games during that time, but I wasn't taking a lot of note about what it meant to be Tom Brady. All I remember is that he cried about his dad, and he had a lot of work done on his face, and he could never commit to a haircut. That's what I remember most about the Tom Brady years. But I think he's right that when players come in and they have this new mentality that we make them superstars. Not only that, but this is why they wind up in trouble, right? Like we talk about this guy, Rashee Rice, who crashed his car in Dallas, and Henry Suggs, you know, crashing his car in Las Vegas. We tell them, like, you're it. You're arrived. There's no more consequences in life. You have more money than God. You have all this power and fame, and nothing could touch you. And they're not mature enough to understand it, and they go out there and do these terrible things. They throw their lives away and other people's lives away. Not that I'm suggesting that Drake May is going to do anything awful or J.J. McCarthy is going to do anything awful. Maybe they've got some maturity, some leadership skills, but just in general, this is something that the draft does to players that I think is overall harmful. And it's one major downside of the draft. And, you know, we're hyping up these unaccomplished strangers, you know, players I don't even know because I don't play close attention to NCAA. Although I probably will be paying more attention to it soon, just because the way NCAA is changing to become more like the professional game. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but it seems like a huge day of hype to kind of just in the NFL, almost like a tent pole. Like you have the Super Bowl and then everyone kind of calms down. Yeah. And then it's all like, well, we're doing the coach firings and now we're doing free agency and now we're doing draft day. And then after this, you know, what is it, OTAs, or what do we got after this? Well, you know, what's the thing that's going to keep us interested in the NFL throughout the summer to get us all the way to the Hall of Fame game? You know, it's going to be something.
Yeah, it's like breadcrumbs. We just keep following the breadcrumbs.
Yeah, this is a they have to have one major day after the Super Bowl to kind of you know, pour a big cup of gasoline on the NFL fire. So that's what it is. Hopefully Dallas will draft well, I guess, you know. I'm not even going to open up the Dallas Cowboys can of worms. Let's just move on that. Matt Ryan has retired. Matty Ice calls it quits. You know, surprisingly, he's actually already a sportscaster, so he already has another job.
I thought he had already retired, to be honest with you, and then I saw it. Yeah. I was like, oh, shit. I mean, he's been an analyst.
I saw him hosting a game this past year. I think it was Packers-Vikings. And at one point during halftime, his whoever was calling the game with him, I want to say Thomas Brenneman maybe or somebody, but he's like, you know, this game, you know, for all the action, you'd think it would be 28-3, but, you know, and he's just getting his little dicks into Matt Ryan, you know, for the Super Bowl that he famously blew. This is from ESPN. So this is from ESPN insider Jonathan Bates. After 15 seasons, 4 Pro Bowls, and a Most Valuable Player award, I can't believe he played for that long. Mm-hmm. Went to 4 Pro Bowls and an MVP. Former Atlanta Falcons and Indianapolis Colts quarterback. That did technically happen. Matt Ryan announced his retirement on Monday, officially ending the career of one of the most durable and consistent players of his generation. Ryan made the announcement in a video statement to social media. So today, 16 years after being drafted, my childhood dream has officially come to an end. There are no more dreams, and there's no more reason to chase dreams. Chasing dreams just makes you frustrated. And although I have had a great deal of success during my time with Atlanta and with the Indianapolis Colts, it was all for no reason. I'm honored to retire as a Falcon, he said. Some of that was added in by me because I'm depressed. See if you could figure out which parts.
You can judge by my face.
He added, you have no control in this profession where you start. I am so lucky that my start and my finish was here in Atlanta. I guess he came back to Atlanta to sign a one-day contract to retire.
That's what I was curious about, because any article I found, I didn't see that. But
I'm guessing that's it. Why else would he address the Falcons? I mean, a lot of players do that. Very normal. I'm surprised Ezekiel Elliott hasn't signed his one-day contract with the Cowboys, but that is literally how that will go. Falcons owner Arthur Blank, in a statement released Monday, said he firmly believes Ryan should be enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What do you think about that, Keith?
I think he should. I mean, he didn't completely blow Super Bowl, but kind of.
It wasn't his fault. That was the defense's fault.
I know. I get it. But no, I mean, I think his numbers were good enough, in my opinion.
And we need to have a big conversation about who gets into the Hall of Fame and why, because I almost think that too many players get in. Keep going.
Okay. I think that would be a good topic, a good show. But when you're able to play that long, and you know you're hitting Pro Bowls and you're putting some of the numbers up. I mean, he's not Tom Brady numbers, but I think that he sustains enough to be with those guys. That's just my opinion, but it could be one of those two that, oh, he played that long. Well, yeah, why not?
Longevity is part of it. But I don't know. I almost think like you're not eligible for I don't know. It's tough because there's so many players. There's so many different positions where you can fundamentally change the game. Like you could be a kickoff or punt returner like Devin Hester. And just because you're the best at your position, the thing that you did that qualifies you for it. But at the same time, Devin Hester never won a Super Bowl. So it's like the debate rages on. And the problem is that, okay, so we can all agree that like Devin Hester was like a phenomenal at his thing that he did. The problem is that now the game is so heavily focused on quarterbacks and what they do, because they're such a big part of it, right? They're the biggest decision maker in every play. Having the right quarterback or not having them often defines your team and your era. It's not always the case. Like, you know, you can be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and have Brad Johnson and win a Super Bowl. You can be the Ravens and had Trent Dilfer and win a Super Bowl. So it's not absolute, but, you know, some of the most iconic players are typically our quarterbacks. So you have to say is Matt Ryan, it's almost like he has to meet a higher standard because of the quarterbacks that are in the Hall of Fame versus, you know, Devin Hester. If he's going in there against like punt returners and stuff, you know, he's far and away and unquestionably very, very good at what he did. Whereas Matt Ryan is like, well, you know, he never won a Super Bowl. So does he deserve to be there in that same, pardon the pun, in league with those other quarterbacks in Canton? You know, it's just kind of an interesting question.
That's a good point. I mean, yeah, the quarterbacks do pull away from some of these other position players that, yeah, I mean, it's a great question to try to get an answer to. How much is enough? What is it? Where's the bar set? And are you competing against a quarterback as a punt returner and, you know, a defensive player? Are those quarterbacks pulling more away from you to where you have to now step up your game that much more? Yeah. It's a very good question. I mean, I've never really completely understood, you know, the checklist that they go through.
Well, like you said before, because a lot of sports writers and things like that are in on the conversation, a lot of it's subjective. Like, you know, Because a player like Matt Ryan, it really depends on the era in which he plays too. Like if there had been no Tom Brady at all, like Matt Ryan would probably be a good fit in for a Hall of Fame discussion, but his career was completely subsumed and under the shadow of somebody like Tom Brady. And in fact, he was famously defeated by the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So it's like, anytime you have a question about Matt Ryan, and this isn't fair to Matt Ryan, but it's just like, well, there was that one Super Bowl and Tom Brady. So now we're talking about Matt Ryan, but we're also now talking about someone else. And so it's not really fair to Matt Ryan, but some interesting stuff about him is that he started all 234 games he played during his career. So he never came in as a backup, including every game for the Falcons. He missed, at least from 2010 to 2019, he did miss three games because of an ankle injury. He led the NFL in completions twice in 2019 and 2020. That's kind of amazing that just a few years ago he was doing that well. Of course, the last 5 years have like flown by in a haze. I barely remember the last 5 years.
That's fact.
He completed 65% of his passes for 62,792 yards, 381 touchdowns, 183 interceptions with a quarterback rating of 93.6. Finished his career fifth in NFL history in completions and attempts. Well, that's a good stat. Seventh in yards, ninth in touchdowns, eighth in passing. Ninth in sacks taken. His 46 game winning drives are sixth in NFL history, two ahead of his good friend Matt Stafford, who becomes the active leader in game winning drives with 44. Ryan's 38 career fourth quarter comebacks are fourth all time, just behind Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Ben Roethlisberger.
And so if you're being named with those,
yeah,
and all the stats that you just read, I mean, he's within the top 10 or top 8.
Man, kind of making the case for him, aren't I?
Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate you.
You appreciate me, or you appreciate yourself?
I appreciate you for arguing my point for me.
I didn't know we were arguing against each other. My point is that, you know, I'd never played a lot of attention to Atlanta. And so I think maybe that was where I was falling, is that just I was never a big Matty Ice guy, you know. Just,
well, until I started looking at, you know, look at this with him retiring, I honestly wasn't aware of some of these stats as well. I mean, you saw him, you always saw him every Sunday, but again, I wasn't following him either. But I mean, those are some pretty decent stats to make a claim anyway.
Yeah, I would guess that he probably will go in. Maybe it won't be a first ballot, but at some point he'll probably go in. He's definitely going to be. He's probably one of the best Falcons players of all time. I don't think we can even argue about that.
Yeah.
So good for Matt Ryan. Wish him all the best. He seemed like a good guy, you know. Hopefully he does well for himself. Kirk Cousins, also a good guy. Here's interesting, since we were talking about the Falcons. The Falcons obviously just had a huge era of Matt Ryan. They're trying to figure out how to establish a new identity, find a new franchise quarterback, I assume. Instead of, you know, finding some way to do that makes sense, they take Kirk Cousins, who will now be on his fifth team, just coming into free agency out of the Minnesota Vikings, which I have, first of all, for the record, I have always liked Kirk Cousins. I like him as a person, and I like him as a player. I don't think he's bad at all. But apparently there was some sort of tampering that the Falcons went through for acquiring Kirk Cousins. What that means is that there's a time frame during which the Falcons are not, he's still under contract with Minnesota. Minnesota's still in negotiations with him. The Falcons are not supposed to be talking to Kirk Cousins. Do you have any takes on this before I read the article?
It's so that tampering period is his agent is allowed. I'm getting clarification. His agent is allowed to talk to him, but Kirk Cousins himself is not allowed to address anybody in the organization. Is that correct?
I believe so. Yeah.
That's the way I understand it. I just want to make sure I was,
I think that's the whole point of having an agent. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to be a smartass. I just think that's the reason why you have them, is so that you can avoid, so you can have someone who's willing to entertain all opportunities for you and act on your behalf, know what your interests are, know what your desires are, know what kind of money you want to play for, right, what you're willing to say no to. And you're completely out of it. It's like having a lawyer, right? Like, you know, going to court and there's other lawyers there and the judge is there. And that your attorneys, it knows whether or not you committed this crime and whether or not you're willing to plead for it for certain bargains or whatever. But the lawyer can say whatever he wants to say without really directly, you know, implicating you in a crime. Anyway, just because this is a first responder show, that's why I had to throw that in there. I had to make sure you understand that sports is essentially the same thing as Law and Order. So what will the NFL do to punish the Falcons for tampering? And the question is in the headline. The answer is whatever the NFL wants to do. That's true. The NFL can really do whatever the hell they want. That's often the case. It's one of the most basic realities in the league that makes decisions on a case-by-case basis, otherwise known as making it up as they go. Most recently, Arizona's tampering with Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon resulted in two teams swapping third-round picks and Cardinals getting a fifth-round pick in 2024 from Philadelphia Eagles in a deal announced literally minutes before the draft began. Before that, the Dolphins lost a first-round pick for tampering with both Saints coach Sean Payton and Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady. The two teams victimized by tampering got nothing. It's funny that the teams that actually got victimized literally get nothing out of the deal. It's literally about the NFL protecting itself rather than helping these teams. Then in 2016, the Chiefs lost a third-round pick, and they got some fines for the Chiefs communicating directly with Eagles receiver Jeremy Maclin during the negotiating window. Do you think it's possible that some teams, when the Chiefs think that they can possibly induce Jeremy Maclin to join their team, they're just like, well, we don't know what kind of punishment we're going to face. We don't know if it's just going to be a little pee-pee slap or if it's going to be like they have to make a sit out for a year or, what it's going to be. And they're maybe willing to take their chances. Do you think it would be better, Keith, if the NFL had a hard and fast policy about like minimum punishments that you're going to face for tampering? Because if you see somebody like Maclin or Cousins, depending on how bad off you are, maybe you're willing to take that chance.
Right. And you would think that there is a steadfast rule, just like in any organization, a set of standard operating procedures to where you can't make up the punishment as you go. Oh, well, it's the Chiefs. We're only going to give them this. And versus the Cowboys, we're hammering them on this. Yeah. I mean, to take that chance, I mean, it's rolling the dice. It's like playing craps.
Yeah. Before gauging a potential punishment for the Falcons, it's important to know the infractions. Kirk Cousins had already said that he spoke to the Falcons' head athletic trainer during the window that permitted communications between the Falcons and agent Mike McCartney only. Cousins also might have spoken to Falcons' director of player, Ryan Pace. I don't know how you could be director of player and not director of players, but ask Yahoo Sports. Right. Maybe he's just literally the director of one player.
I'm only in charge of this. I'm doing nothing else.
I just love criticizing bad journalists because I feel like you should have someone proofreading your papers. Ryan Pace during the negotiating window. Cousins likewise participated in the recruitment of Bears receiver Darnell Mooney during the negotiation window. That surely didn't happen spontaneously. Falcons tight end Kyle Pitts spent multiple weeks recruiting Cousins. There you go. Like, how do you control your players from trying to recruit people? It seems like, if you have a guy like Kyle Pitts who wants to throw blocks for a good quarterback and get receptions from a good quarterback, it seems like Kyle Pitts definitely has an interest in who the quarterback is. He wants to have a great career. Right. He wants to make sure that there's a great quarterback who's going to be involved in giving him the ball. I can see Kyle Pitts, wanting to just advocate for himself and his own career, because the more touchdowns he has, the more success that he has, all depend on who that quarterback is. And, that directly affects his pay, his contract negotiations, his longevity in the NFL. And, are we going to put all these guys under contract saying you're not allowed to talk to each other? Because that's a little bit draconian. So, of course, Pitts is going to want to get a guy like Kirk Cousins to come play for him for a year.
Oh, we're seeing how gag orders work right now anyway.
We are seeing how gag orders work. The thing is, you really want to put, if we can't figure out what the punishment is for tampering, I mean, the argument is circular, are we going to put that out down to the level of each and every player? That's just the stuff we know about. Cousins might have met with Atlanta's trainer. He might have met with others, might have spoken with others. The Falcons might have secured information about Cousins' torn Achilles tendon before they should have. That's another thing when these teams are making arrangements for trades and all this and trying to make arrangements for trades, they're always holding something back. Stephon Diggs, when he got traded down to Texas or Houston, how much did Buffalo know about any injuries he might have? Well, the Texans don't necessarily get to know. And it could be that that's why Buffalo is willing to let him walk for as much or as little as they did, because they know secrets about what's going on.
Right.
If the Falcons get whacked for Cousins, talking to the head athletic trainer, a third round pick would be the punishment. precedent means anything. If the Falcons are punished for all violations, it could stack into far more significant punishment. So that's something else about the draft day, is that you get to see who's being punished for what. A little bit ridiculous. But that's all part of the pageantry, too, is that they like to come out and the NFL will like to announce, Philadelphia, you're about to be in the clock. Oh, wait. I punish you. You're punished. So good luck with that back of the line. So that's another part of it where they like to make it very, very dramatic to sustain interest throughout the season and give people like you and me and ESPN and Stephen A. Smith plenty to talk about.
Well, it's like one of those things too. Like, well, you only punished, I'm just going to use Dallas. You only punished Dallas, this draft pick and X, Y, and Z, but yet the Bengals only got this. Like, what's your justification?
Well, the reason why they do that is because they want to maintain parity in the league to such an extent where, like, they'll go after a guy like Tom Brady and have all kinds of Deflategate type scandals and punishments and suspensions and whatever else. And same thing with Ezekiel Elliott, where, they'll go after certain organizations and certain people if they're high profile enough, and they'll try to make examples out of them or whatever. But mostly what it comes down to is just being more heavy handed with the people that, can take it more. It's you could call it discretionary, but you could also be cynical and just say that it's more about generating those headlines, an image for themselves. Like case in point, with Ray Lewis, how much was he punished for his obstruction of justice, when he possibly killed somebody? It was the highest fine anyone had ever paid, except for substance abuse, So it was like, we got to make sure that it's all contextualized properly. And Ray Lewis was obviously being a big deal at that time. It's still sort of a big deal. That influenced how much his punishment would be. It was what a big deal he was. So is Kirk Cousins a big deal as Ray Lewis, and how will that affect his punishment, and how will that affect the Falcons? We'll find out. That'll be something to watch for. Here's kind of a funny, weird story. Former Panthers wide receiver Devin Funchess makes history by signing a pro basketball contract. And I know what you're thinking. Is he playing for the WNBA? Because this would be a breakthrough for them. If they could get Devin Funchess, that might bring almost as much attention to the Indiana Fever as Caitlin What's-Her-Face. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Caitlin Clark. He should be allowed to play.
I don't even mean, he should be. I mean, if we're all equal and we're all, sex is just a thing that's completely made, not whatever. I don't want to start this. I already have a headache. I can't even joke about it without
making myself. I keep trying to lead you down a path.
I keep trying. Devin Funchess has officially made the jump, according to Brandon Robinson. The former Carolina Panthers wideout has inked a one-year contract with the Caribbean Storm of the Basketball League of Colombia. So not the NBA, not the WNBA, but Colombia's basketball league.
I heard their season tickets are cheap.
Breaking news, Colombia has a basketball team, and Devin Funchess is in it. Per Robinson, the signing makes Funchess the first NFL player ever to make the transition to pro basketball. That is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. A lot of players have gone the other way. Didn't Jimmy Graham? I don't think he was a professional. No, he played college
basketball. I don't think he went pro.
Devin Funchess tells Scoop B via text message that he's thrilled to play basketball, blessed by the man from above for the opportunity. Well, first of all, I like that opportunity. Appreciate to those involved with my journey from the Philippines to Australia to now here to Colombia. So this guy's a globetrotter to kind of maintain his status as a professional athlete, which I'm not putting him down for at all. If you could be paid money to play a sport and people want to pay you to do it, why the hell go into broadcasting and risk it, where every week, you're going to, at first, like Tony Romo was lauded and now people hate listening to the guy. Well, why are you going to go into something else where you kind of don't, you almost become kind of a joke or a joke of yourself, whether you're going into motivational speaking or charity work, or you work at your dad's used car dealership, whatever happens to you, it's all sort of a joke compared to what you were doing. This guy is working really hard to maintain his status as a professional athlete. And you kind of have to admire that. Funchess, who had been pursuing basketball career for the past few years, said the following to Robinson back in December of 2022. When it comes to my love and passion, I love the game of basketball. As in my transition from dwindling down in the NFL, being an 8-year vet, I'm still 28 years old. I can still go through something. I know I'd have to go overseas and play, get some film. But after that, my dream growing up was to play in the NBA. That's my main goal, and that's what I'm going to make happen. That's amazing that he wants to basically develop a track record as a professional basketball player and try to get in the NBA. That would be amazing. Carolina selected Funchess in the second round of the 2015 draft. He went on to amass 161 receptions for well over 2,000 yards, 21 touchdowns over four seasons as a Panther. So that's pretty cool. Good for him. Any takes on him continuing his pro career?
I think to have that height of athletic ability, period. You know, even though it's not NBA professional basketball as we know it, you know, there are a ton of people that come out of college that go play in Europe or, you know, wherever. But to have that athletic ability to take it from a football field to a basketball court, I think is amazing. And we talked before, it amazes me that he's only 28. I thought he was older than that. I mean, it just seemed like when I was watching him play football, he was, you know, eight seasons, but it seemed like it was longer for whatever reason.
I think it's funny when you watch other teams, you start to have, if you're not paying very close attention to the players, you start to have very unrealistic ideas about them. Like, I have this weird idea that Fletcher Cox played for the Eagles for over, like, he played easily for them for 20 years, you know, which is not true.
Right.
But I got so sick of dealing with Fletcher Cox. I'm just like, God, man, like, this guy was playing, like, a long time ago, like, deep, deep, deep into Tony Romo's career. When is he going to go away? Because, you see your generation's rise and fall, right? Like, the Romo, the Witten, Dez Bryant era is over. But Fletcher Cox is still there on the Eagles game on Sunday. You're just like, God damn it. Where does this guy go away? Like, all my favorite players are going away. Why is the guy I hate for the Eagles still there? So it's possible that you just cut enough Devin Funchess, particularly since they're not even a conference rival for the Bengals, that you were just aware of him enough on your periphery to have an idea that he was there for a while. And maybe you just see him like someone who was there longer than he was.
I think it's awesome. I hope he is able to attain his goal and he does well in the Caribbean League and then he does make it to the NBA. I think that would be badass.
Yeah. Best of luck to him being 28, traveling the world and playing sports, Australia, Philippines, and Colombia. It's just a great life. So good for him. I'm not even mad.
I'd be curious to know what he's making.
Millions and millions of dollars, I'm sure. Man, his whole life is just boats and hoes. Anyway. You wanted to talk about this. We mentioned this earlier, the NCAA becoming a lot more like the NFL. This comes from 11 Warriors, which is some sort of Ohio thing. I'm sure they mentioned the Buckeyes specifically in this article.
It's fact.
NCAA approves
helmet. It's an Ohio State publication, by the way.
All right. Sorry. Go Buckeyes. beat Panthers or no Wolverines. Sorry. Yeah. Wrong Michigan team. I know you hate them all. And anyway, back to this. NCAA approves helmet communication, 2-minute warning effective for the 2024 football season. So this has been like a huge thing. That's a difference between NFL and college. And now it's over. Two college football rules were made official on Friday. The NCAA playing rules oversight panel officially approved both in-helmet communication on the field and the 2-minute warning at the end of each half for college football effective this season. It's amazing how much is changing in football. We have a playoff structure now and we're adopting these rules. Watch overtime completely change within the next couple of years, Keith, where it's going to be completely like the NFL. Each team will be allowed to have one player in the field at a time with direct communication of the coaches through his helmet. I'm guessing it will be the quarterback, although it does not say that here. And the player will be identified with a green dot on the back of the midline of his helmet. Communication will be closed within 15 seconds remaining of the play clock or when the ball is snapped, whichever comes first on a given play. Ohio State, a local team of men who play football, has already worked some in-helmet communication during spring practice with up to 3 players allowed to work with it during a training session. The Buckeyes rotated through those players throughout spring ball. It's been good to work through that, Day said on March 19th. Chip Kelly dealt with it when he was in the NFL, so he has experience in that. The easy thing is when you're in the huddle, you just call the play and the quarterback calls the play. And it's that simple. Yeah. Kind of like taking away like the years of a quarterback to like have to think for themselves. And we're also making it so like a quarterback doesn't have to be smart anymore. They just have to be able to remember stuff and have like muscle memory. And so I think this is us officially putting an end to the era in which a guy like Peyton Manning rises to the top, right? Because like Peyton Manning was brilliant. Wasn't just, he didn't necessarily just need things fed to him. A true field general in the style of Johnny Unitas, you know, like a true quarterback. I think this is us putting that to bed with technology, that we're just not going to have that anymore. So yeah, you just call it in. It's that simple. But there are other ways to build in different hybrids between signals and calling of the quarterback. Yeah, I mean, there's still, I would be surprised if they completely just went straight to radio and weren't using any of the other stuff. There's verbal and the physical signal, and something new in college each day. We're learning a little bit more about it. Teams will also have the option to use tablets on the sideline, exclusive to view in game video. The video can include broadcast feed and camera angles from coach's sideline and the coach's end zone. Up to 18 tablets are permitted to use between the coach's booth, sideline, and locker room. Additionally, the NFL automatic on-field timeout will be called at the first dead ball after the clock hits the two-minute warning, 2 minutes remaining of the first at the end of the second and fourth quarters. That'll change things too, the pace of the game, the structure of the game. But why do you think that they're adding the two-minute warning? I mean, we get the helmet communications. They're trying to increase the complexity of plays that they can call. They're trying to create a more dynamic offenses, create offenses that people want to watch on TV, and thus increase the money of the game. I mean, it's the same reason why the NFL brought in radios, which I don't know if you know, this was actually Paul Brown's idea way back in the day. But why are they bringing in the two-minute warning? Just to sell more commercials, or do you think that's actually part of the structure?
Yeah, to be honest with you, my personal opinion is I think it's money. I mean, it's more advertising, but then they have a better way of controlling the end of the game, or yeah, the end of the half, the end of the game. Slows it down to where, you know, you've got a team that's just barreling, they've got momentum. If they want to control the outcome of that game one way or another, that's a perfect way, is essentially to kind of ice them.
Well,
but twofold with that is it's also getting it closer to NFL style play, which is where most of these guys are going to go. So I don't disagree with it, but I think there's more of an underlying reason for it.
I think too, they're trying to capture guys like me, where we're so into NFL style play and we haven't been paying attention to college ball. And then if you're more of a Neanderthal than I am, you turn on a Saturday game and you're like, well, what the hell's going on? Why is there no 2 minute warning?
Right.
You know, someone, you know, I understand that the rules are different. You're essentially trying to capture that NFL audience. You're just going to copy and paste them until the two are indistinguishable, you know, case in point, the playoff structure and whatever else. And the way that it's being managed, you know, I guess the one positive takeaway from it is that it gives your defense a chance to rest, whoever's on the field. I'm very pro defense. So I guess there's that, but ultimately the 2 minute warning exists for a reason, and it's successful in the NFL. So here we go.
With the helmet, with the in-helmet communication, they're not going to be able to go away from the way they're calling plays now currently, just because you and I know, just doing this, you know, technology fails. Technology is technology.
Yeah.
And when we rely too much on it, that's when we fail. So they're going to have to still have some of that, but I agree with you in the fact that you're not going to have a perfect example to Peyton Manning's that can just with your title, your name there, all willy nilly throw out a play and it be a banger.
Yeah.
You know, so they're still going to have to be some studying and some, you know, intelligence involved if you're going to be the guy calling the plays. But because, I mean, you see them all the time, you know, them putting their, you know, their hands over their ear holes because they can't hear, or they're
the helmet working. Breaks. Yeah, just the crowd noise too, which is definitely going to be a thing at college games because they have NFL size crowds there.
They've got bigger than NFL size crowds.
They often have bigger. So
100,000, most of these, you know, the big stadiums over 100,000.
Yeah, Neyland Stadium, I think, is one of the bigger ones, if I'm not mistaken. The Volunteers. I could be wrong on that.
I don't know theirs.
No, let's not throw out any names. None of us knows anything. but to your case in point, like, I remember one more and I'm out of here, your podcast. I remember when it was completely technology free, when it was just the three of you guys out in the park doing your show, just standing around talking about porn stars and stuff. And then like the cops come up and you're like, what are you guys doing? And then Rob's like, well, we're doing a podcast, man. And Keith's like, yeah, we're just having a good time. And then the cops are like, there's children here trying to play. And like literally a Frisbee goes by your face. Do you remember when one or more and I'm out of here was literally you guys drinking beer in the park? Very inappropriate.
We with cans with a string tied to them. That's how we were communicating.
That was back in the day. Anyway, so you became more professional, involved more technology, and there was major upsides for you guys as a podcast once you started using electricity and other modern conveniences. So it was a leap forward for you guys. So I get it. Let's talk about Jake Bates. We've been mentioning him the past couple weeks on the show. Just to mention that he's still in a streak. Nothing extraordinary, but he's still doing well. Jake Bates, UFL kicker, Detroit Lion target, keeping his field goal streak alive. UFL and Michigan Panthers kicker has gotten off to a start, heard round the world, made yet another field goal in the team's week four loss to the San Antonio Brahmas, which will only make him more attractive to the team like the Detroit Lions that could use another kicker. Bates entered Saturday's contest with a perfect 5-for-5 on field goals, with two of his makes from ridiculously long distances of 64 and 62. He makes his other makes amounts to chip shots as compared to those from 55, 52, and 46. Yeah, this guy can make anything. Well, we can add a 6 make for Bates, who had his number called right before halftime once again and made his 49-yard attempt look routine, with the Arkansas product splitting the uprights to put his team on the board. The field goal was the first Bates had attempted and made from Ford Field during the NFL campaign, showing he can make his kicks into hostile territory. Just great for him. Love seeing this. The guy's not related to me. I wish I could claim him.
That's why I figured you liked him.
Yeah. Well, he would be the only Bates that I did like. Unfortunately, that was all we would see from Bates that evening, as he did not attempt another field goal the rest of the way for the 19-9 loss. That's not his fault. Lest we forget, Bates hadn't attempted a single field goal since high school before his first make this UFL year. That, along with the sheer distance of his field goals, makes his run even more impressive. The Lions have been expressing interest in possibly tampering, who has had cups of coffee with the Houston Texans and Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the NFL. However, Bates cannot sign with an NFL team until after the UFL season. Remember, it's a 10-week season. I believe we just had week 5. They also have a postseason game and a championship game. If he can sustain this kind of success the rest of the season, it won't be long before he goes to the NFL. So this is something I'm more excited about than the draft, is wondering where he'll wind up. He could wind up playing for the Lions, but we'll see. It's definitely not going to be for the Cowboys, but just a cool story, just that this guy could go from nothing to something, and it's just by being good at his job.
The fact that he hadn't tried a kick since high school, which I think is cool. But yeah, I mean, to see this guy trying, I mean, just what Funches is doing in another league, trying to get, he's trying to do something different, but this guy's just trying to make his way. And I've definitely, since you've gotten me into the UFL now, I've been paying attention. I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. So my Battle Hawks play Sunday, by the way.
My Houston Roughnecks finally had a win.
Yay.
Yay. So, we're so playing this year. Yeah. I don't know. It's just not really working out. But it's exciting. It'll be fun to watch. And now we're heading into the kind of the second half of the season. And this is typically where kind of things kind of turn around. I don't know if Houston has to basically win out to have a playoff chance at this point. So, and other teams really have to lose out. So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe I don't need to go into a lot of UFL commentary, but I'm enjoying spring football. The Texans have new threads. This is a team that has been around since 2002. They're the newest team. They have never really had a major uniform change. They brought out red helmets last year, which I know no one's really excited about. But it's always funny when you have like a throwback weekend in the NFL, right? And you see like the Detroit Lions like essentially wearing their uniform from like 1954 that doesn't even have a fucking logo on it. Or the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, they're playing their 1964 variants. Or
the horrible Steelers Bumblebee uniform.
The horrible Steelers Bumblebees, or like, the Patriots with their, their classic throwback logo. A lot of these teams don't have bad looks, I'll even say the Eagles with their Kelly Greens, that they're bringing back this season. It's an interesting look, but the Texans haven't been around long enough. So on these throwback weekends, it's just like, well, yeah, this is, we're going to go back to the David Carr era. And they're like, you look exactly the same. They don't have anything really going for them. So with that in mind, and with a new momentum in mind, with CJ Stroud and possibly heading into what could possibly be the most successful period in Houston Texans, They've launched some new uniforms. And I don't know what you think about these. The red helmet with the big long horn on the side. They like calling themselves H-Town, I guess. I don't know. It's not a bad-looking helmet. I guess I'm neither here nor there on it.
I think they look sharp. I think they look sharp. And the other variations that I've seen, because what they've got, like, three different ones.
They do. I'll throw up some others. The thing is with the horn is that it reminds me of the Los Angeles Rams horn. And then the Vikings also have a horn, like a right. Vikings helmet horn. So I could see why this was not their first helmet. Like, you know, when they were first launching, you know, 22 years ago, I'm sure that they had a variant of this in mind. Like, oh, we'll just put a long horn on the side. But then we're like, it's too close to the Rams and the Vikings and all this. But I guess they're just going for it. Because what else, you know, unless you're going to, like, literally have some guy from Texas on the side, where are you going to go?
Right.
what else do we got here? Where's the other ones? Oh, here's the other ones. So these are like their weird third ones that they're going to do. The NFL's allowing a third uniform this year. And it's all for money, obviously. But these are like their complete alternate, like
these are the colors. Ones their color rush is
yeah,
that
color rush. Exactly. Thank you. Look at the logo on his shoulder there. Doesn't that just look like it's Houston Texans logo, but like clearly like a deviant sex party rave club. Like it looks like it's something that's going to light up with a black light. And the reason why it throws me is because the Texans have the colors of the state of Texas flag. So it has always sort of made sense to me. It's unfortunate that, you know, Texas state flag is really just a riff on the United States flag. So it's the same colors as, you know, a third of all teams in the NFL, red, white, and blue. You know, are they playing the Patriots? Are they playing the Bills? Are they playing the Giants? Well, they all look the same, at least to the casual viewer. But these, you know, these are a little bit more interesting. The H with the old English script or whatever seems a little gangish to me. I spent too much time in prison to not be kind of like put off by that kind of script. I guess it's cool. It gives them something else to sell. Something I was less thrilled by was the Lions are bringing back their black jerseys, which are, it's okay. They're going to have a different stripe on them this time. This is not something most people notice. The Broncos launched a new uniform for the first time in many years. Theirs are going to be different. Those are the kind of the throwbacks that you see pictured here. If you're just listening, this whole segment is pointless to you. This is why I put it at the end. But the Jets made me mad. This is why I felt strongly enough about it to talk about it at all. The Jets are launching a new jersey. No pun intended, because the Jets play in New Jersey, Keith. Anyway, I know somebody that constantly mentions that New York really only has one team, and it's the Bills. But
I think so. The Jets are speaking of.
Yes, the Jets have launched a jersey here where it's got these two white stripes on the shoulders. Classic look, really not a new look. But a few years ago, they launched this look where they had the kind of this pointed, I don't know, vector that went across the chest. And I thought it looked really stupid. And the Jets have to keep relaunching their jerseys every few years because they have nothing going for them as a team. They're like the Oregon Ducks of teams in the NFL, where like they don't have anything going for them as an actual organization. They don't have hopes for the future. I mean, their hopes literally rest on Aaron Rodgers, who is not going to be playing for a long time, not just because he will tear his Achilles even faster this year, but because he just doesn't have that many years left in the NFL. But these teams with nothing going for them, we'll often relaunch their uniforms, and the Jets are no exception. They're putting that out there. Broncos also putting out new uniforms because they have nothing going for them either. Lions, on the other hand, are paying homage to the Dan Campbell era when he was a player. They were playing in these black jerseys, kind of the start of the Matt Stafford era. Bringing those back, I think they look pretty good. Black jerseys are something that's been adopted by most teams in the NFL. I think the Cowboys may be the only team never to play in a black jersey. I think that's possible. Keith, do you know anything about that? The Bengals play in black jerseys, so maybe you know something about that.
Yeah, we do. And
Patriots, maybe.
As you were saying, yeah, I think probably, I mean, I think there's more that haven't played in a black jersey, but I was thinking of the Cowboys. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the Cowboys play in a
black jersey. No, it's because we go back to that old idea that, like, if you watch a Western, the good guys are always wearing the white cowboy hats. The bad guys always wear black cowboy hats. So it would just be against our ethos to wear a black jersey. Also, the whole reason why we started wearing white jerseys in the first place was, aside from the fact that Tex Schramm wanted to have lots of different colored uniforms there every single week, with having the teams that were playing road games wearing their home jerseys, was that Dallas, when they were playing the Cotton Bowl, it tended to be very hot. You can dispel a lot of heat by wearing the color white. And so Dallas wore white, and some team has to have white as their primary color. So it's the Dallas Cowboys. It's America's team. So we'll never play in a black jersey. I don't think there's maybe a few other teams that don't, but I will say this about the Lions. You know, if anyone cares, it looks better than their completely fog gray. They have color rush. That's just fog gray tops and bottoms, and they look atrocious. They look they look like prisoners.
It's like the movie Unnecessary Roughness. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's just not a good look. I don't think gray is a dynamic or a thrilling color. And I get that they're trying to take the silver off of their helmets and incorporate that into more of the uniform. I understand that. But I think the black is maybe just a better look for them, more eye-catching. It does make them look suspiciously like the Panthers. So remember that Carolina blue and Honolulu blue are not the same color. And they're also not the same color as Columbia blue, which is the color that you're going to see the Titans wear when they throw back as the Oilers. Also, very conspicuous here, Columbia blue present here in these Texans uniforms. Look at the H there, Keith, this bright blue. That is very clearly Oilers blue.
I agree.
So that is a move of wanton aggression towards the team that used to be there and left. It always drives me nuts, right? When that team, people like J.J. Watt and all this are like, oh, the Texans, we own the rights to those colors. We own the rights to the Oilers heritage because this is Houston, baby, and we love you, blue, and all this. I'm like, no, Houston treated the Oilers so bad that they basically said, to hell with you. I'm leaving Houston forever. I'm going to Tennessee. We're taking the Oilers with me, and we're going to make sure that when we change our name to the Titans that we're retiring the name Oilers, so that the new team, whenever it comes to Houston, whenever that happens, you can't call yourself the Oilers. You can never help yourself to your IP. So there's like legal and emotional issues there with like the Houston Texans thinking that they're like the next generation of the Oilers. They're not. The Oilers were not a great team, which is why they left. If they were popular, if they were successful, they would have stayed in Houston. So why are you trying to get that heritage, first of all? But also, like I said, the IP belongs to your arch rivals. Like, can you imagine this? Just case in point, like, what's the greatest rivalry? Honestly, it's almost the case for you with the Browns and becoming the Ravens and all this. I know it doesn't directly involve you as a Bengals fan. But imagine the Ravens all of a sudden started claiming Browns heritage, and they had their throwback weekend and they were going to wear the color brown uniforms because they used to be the Browns. It would be insane because it's like, no, the Browns are your arch rivals. You hate the Browns. You're supposed to. You left that name and you left that city behind because you didn't want to be there. Can you imagine the Baltimore Ravens having a throwback, which they go out wearing orange and brown colors? It would be insane. And yet that is exactly what Houston is doing. And nobody can call attention to the insanity of it. I know only I care. Only I'm pedantic and weird enough to care about that. But that is how I'm ending the podcast this week. Keith, any last takes?
No, I think that's a perfect way to end it. I don't think you're wrong there at all. Looking forward to next week to cover the results of the draft that we really didn't care about.
Can't wait to break it all down, you know?
big breakdown.
It might be exciting if a team makes a big move or does something that's potentially smart or potentially stupid. One last thing I hate about the draft, if I may mention. I mentioned this before the show. All the mock draft bullshit, all the stuff you hear from all these talking heads, pundits, all of it's stupid. All of it could never happen. I saw one on Yahoo Sports where this guy's like, oh, my mock draft has Dallas trading up. They trade Dak Prescott to the Broncos. And I'm like, they would never, ever, ever, ever do that. The Jerry Jones would never do that. It's not a Jerry move, first of all.
Right.
I don't think any team would trade their franchise quarterback for a draft pick. You have to remember what Dak is worth in terms of stats. He's worth so much more than any unknown quantity. I wouldn't trade Dak Prescott for the first overall draft pick. And we're not even coming out and saying that Dak's that great. I'm just saying, you know what you get with Dak Prescott. You don't know what you get with the first overall draft pick.
Right.
And the quarterback is such a critical position that you're not just going to trade everything you know for everything you don't know, right? You're not going to do that. But also, Dak has a no trade clause in his contract, meaning he doesn't get traded unless he wants to be traded. And he doesn't want to go to the Broncos because why the hell would he? The Broncos don't have anything going for him. They have to be in the same division against the Chiefs. Yeah, Sean Payton as a coach is a good idea because he's, you know, he won a Super Bowl or whatever. He's someone other than Mike McCarthy, but he also treated Russell Wilson like shit last year. So like, you have to kind of wonder like, what are Sean Payton's like credentials as a nice coach and as someone you want to work with?
Yeah. They fought like son and stepdad.
Yeah. So why would you want to go in there after Russell Wilson, who's already won a Super Bowl? And if you, and it just case in point with Sean Payton, he's not impressed by you. If you've won a Super Bowl, he's still going to yell at your face right in front of all your teammates that you're supposed to be the on-field leader of. I think I'm completely against the way Sean Payton treated Russell Wilson, only because you don't yell at your quarterback in front of the other players. That's something that Vince Lombardi used to do with Bart Starr. And Bart Starr literally went up against Vince Lombardi of all people and said, like, listen, you're the boss of me and I'll do whatever you say. But when I am out on that field, I'm the boss of those players and you're not going to talk to me that way. Yep. And Vince Lombardi was known for being absolutely tough on his players. Vince Lombardi says, you're right, to Bart Starr. Like, at one point, this is the first, I don't know if you know this quick story, Keith, but the first player to ever get an agent was this guy named, I think his name was Jim Ringo, and I think he played center for the Green Bay Packers. In off season, he goes into Vince Lombardi's office and he says, Hey, Coach Lombardi, could I talk to you? And they go into his office and he's got his agent with him. And he goes like, I want to negotiate for a bigger salary. Cause at this time, Vince Lombardi is also the GM of the Packers. And Vince Lombardi says, okay, this is an important conversation. I want to have this conversation with you, but I've got to make a quick phone call. Can you just step out outside real quick? And then when you come back inside, we're going to talk about your pay raise. Okay. So Jim Ringo's like, okay, coach, we'll be right back. Steps out of the office. Lombardi has the phone call. They come back in and Ringo says, okay, so this is my agent and we're going to talk about kind of what I'd like to see in terms of a salary this year. Vince Lombardi says, I just traded you to the Eagles. Get the fuck out of my office. That is literally who Vince Lombardi is. But Bart Starr went up against Vince Lombardi and said, do not talk to me that way in front of the players because I have to be seen as a leader in front of them. If you're the general, you know, I've got to be seen as the colonel when I'm out there. And you cannot do that to me in front of the players.
You can't undermine.
We can't undermine them like that. So Sean Payton doing the exact same thing to Russell Wilson, you know, 50 years later, just shows you that, you know, Sean Payton doesn't even necessarily have the wherewithal that Vince Lombardi had. And he should by now, because we've all been able to look at Vince Lombardi and say, who should we be as a coach? And Vince Lombardi is the role model. So if you haven't learned from Vince Lombardi, you know, you may, and I'm not taking anything away from Sean Payton. I like him. I wish he was the head coach of the Cowboys, but he hasn't learned that. And so why would Dak Prescott want to throw himself into a situation where even a Super Bowl winning quarterback like Russ Wilson is going to go to the Broncos, willingly be traded? So to bring it all back together, you see these stupid mock draft situations, and it's all to get clickbait. It's all to get people to read on this article. And it's all this like fantasy scenarios. Like, what if the Cowboys could offload Dak Prescott to the Broncos and the Broncos could get Dak Prescott? And it's all the same thing as like just having a wet dream, and it's not based on anything. It's all pointless and stupid, and it's all clickbait. And people fall for it, and then they're all talking to each other about it, and it's just like these sports writers should know better than to put this absolute crap out there in the world. It's like, I'm not a sports writer. I know less about sports probably than they do, but at least I'm not like entertaining these bullshit ideas like Dak Prescott's going to go to the Broncos. And watch, you know, now that we're doing this and the draft's happening, something like that will happen, and I'll have to like delete this episode so that there's going to be rewatches. Anyway, that's the last thing I hate about the draft. All right, Keith, when's the next episode of One More and I'm Out of Here?
We got one Friday at 4 o'clock Eastern.
Friday at 4 p.m. Make sure you're tuning in. You got any good guests? You're getting good topics? Do you have any idea yet? Is it too early to say?
Too early. I think it's going to be just me and Dan at this point, but I'm going to scour the internet and hopefully not post something to get my shit blocked again.
Yeah, that happens to both of us. All right, folks, thanks for watching. Failure to Stop, we appreciate you. Tomorrow, Eric's going to have a big case breakdown. It's going to be enjoyable. We'll take the weekend off. We'll see you back here on Monday for Comedy Tuesday, a true crime. Hopefully, I'll be back from, I'm going on a little bit of a trip. Hopefully, I'll be back by then. And then on Wednesday, we'll have all the news you need without going insane. And then Thursday for another illegal shift for sports. So guns up, giddy up. See you later, Keith. Good night, America.
Good night, America.